Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Nonprofit Radio, FM 97.3, KZAC LP Sacramento, 104.9 FM, KGIG LP Modesto Ripon, or FM 93.3, KPHD LP Modesto Ceres.
Welcome to today's edition of The Backstory with former Mayor Carmen Sabatino, with news and information you will not read in the local paper or hear on area radio and TV. The Backstory presents an insider's view of what's really happening on a local political scene. And now, let's join your host, Carmen Sabatino, to learn The Backstory.
Well, good morning. Good morning, Dave. How are you this morning?
Just fine, thank you.
You know, we've been away for a few weeks. It seems like a few weeks. But we're back, and we will try and maintain a schedule that you can count on, and there's enough going on that we can do that. We are going to be hopefully joined by Bruce Froman, former city councilman, who's has an article in the Valley Citizen, Will the Valley Run Out of Fresh Water? And while we're waiting for Bruce to call, we wanted to give you a little backstory. You know, the bumper music we use, there ain't nobody here but us chickens, and I thought Bruce would be tuned in already because, as he said, it's his mother's favorite song. I sort of like it, and it's catchy, and it was selected primarily because it's a good analogy to think in terms of who the fox is, and the fox in the chicken house. Here in Modesto is George Petrolakis. George is a development attorney, land use attorney, also very active for decades in deciding who would be elected to positions of who would become elected officials and which officials would be retired. So, anyhow, when we've got, can we play just a little, Bruce, are we here? Hello. Hi, Bruce.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
yes.
I can,
hear
you
me?
Now.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Thanks for joining us. We've already played the bumper music, so you'll have to hear the exit music. Well, no, you can't be, yeah, we're only here for a half hour. Are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
For a half hour? Okay.
Yep.
Well, we played the bumper music, There Ain't Nobody Here But Us Chickens, and
right.
we also ran across an article about chickens gang up to kill intruder fox on a French farm. Did you read that?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, you know the story, the bumper story, as I sort of attach my story to it, that There Ain't Nobody Here But Us Chickens is a little song sung by a fox who got into the chicken house and trying to tell the farmer that everything's cool, just leave us alone, and we'll be fine. And I've sort of the cast of characters, of course, is the chickens, and that's probably us, the general population. And the fox in the chicken house is George Petrolakis, George being a land use attorney, and a very active in politics, deciding who should serve and who shouldn't serve, and warning prospective candidates that they'd better be clean or he will take care of them. So anyhow, it was great interest when I saw this article, Chickens Gang Up to Kill Intruder Fox on French Farm. And this is from BBC News. The article, in a school farm in northwestern France, are believed to have grouped and killed a juvenile fox. The unusual incident in Brittany took place after the fox entered the coop with 3,000 hens through an automatic hatch door, which closed immediately, so he couldn't get out. There was a herd instinct, and they attacked him with their beaks, said Pascal Daniel, head of the farming at the agricultural school Grosseteste. I don't know if that's correct pronunciation. The story goes on to say that the body of the small fox was found the following day in a corner of the coop. It had blows to its neck, blows from beaks, Mr. Daniel told AFP News Agency. The farm is home to up to 6,000 free-range chickens who are kept in a five-acre site. The coop is kept open during the day, and most of the hens spend the daytime outside. Well, apparently they go inside at night, and this poor little fox, unfortunately, went into the wrong place. So I guess, George, we wish you the very well, but we hope there are enough votes out there to defeat some of the things that you want to do. But on a brighter note, and the reason we have Bruce here, Dave, is he wants to talk, and we want to talk about, will the valley run out of fresh water? And Bruce, you've been, over the years, so involved in water issues, and I want to say that it's much appreciated, the time you put in. And you don't publish often, but you publish well. And the latest article found was in the Valley Citizen. And Bruce, maybe you can give us a little synopsis of will the water, fresh water, run out in this county, in this valley?
Well, it's really a complex issue, and water availability will depend greatly upon where you reside. If you reside near the rivers, you're a lot less likely to run out of water than if you live in an area remote from a river, or if you don't have an irrigation district providing you with water. The article I wrote for the Valley Citizen was focusing on the areas of the valley in which the water resources are a lot more critical than they are here in Stanislaus County. Here in Stanislaus County, we're in pretty good shape because we do have two major rivers serving our area, the Tuolumne and the Stanislaus, and then our groundwater aquifer is pretty robust here. However, that could quickly change if the state forced us to start shipping our water to those areas that have a much more severe problem. In the article, I was mentioning how in Madera County, eastern Madera County, they don't have an irrigation district there, but they do have urban development in Madera and outside of Madera. Outside of Madera, there's one along Avenue 12, about 10 miles southeast of the city, and there the water table has now dropped to over 300 feet below ground level. Once the water level gets below 450 feet, pumping that groundwater becomes extremely expensive. And so that urban area is going to probably eventually need to find another source of water, because they're pumping it out of the ground so quickly and they have no surface water available. So they're basically living on their bank account, so to speak, when it comes to water. And so that's an issue that really needs to be addressed. There's large areas of the South Valley that don't have enough water to sustain agriculture and the urban areas. And the state does not seem to be putting forth solutions that are needed. They're talking about taking our water, shipping it south. They want to take more of water from Northern California and ship it south. What they really need to do is find a way to manufacture water. That's about the best solution. And to do that, you can either recycle it or you could import it from the coast. And I was suggesting, as one of the solutions for the South Valley, is to build desalinization plants near Santa Maria and then build a pipeline from Santa Maria into the Central Valley, and then you could ship the water east and meet the need that way. It's expensive to build the infrastructure, but then once you got it in place, you can use it in perpetuity. Did I put you to sleep, Carmen?
No, not at all. He's talking with an employee right now. But I worked at the city of Modesto for a while, and they did a lot of work out there with their tertiary plant. And so, does that go along with what you're talking about, manufacturing water?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last sentence. You're talking about recycling water there?
Yeah, well, I was just curious when you said you can manufacture water. I didn't know if that's one of the ways you're talking about.
Well, there's actually two ways to manufacture it. One way is getting it out of the ocean, you know, through the desalinization plants. And I was reading that someone has invented a process to extract water from air. The only thing about that is when you do that, then you could affect the climate and make it even drier than it already is if you're taking whatever existing water's in the air. If our humidity is 10-20% and you're taking water out of that, you're going to cause the humidity to drop even further, and I'm not sure that particular method is a good way of getting water compared to the desalinization.
I was stationed in the Navy on submarines for a while, and their desalinization, fantastic. It has to be. And one of the things I noticed, and I'm still a member of the Navy League, and I follow up on it, but the newest class of submarines out there have 45% less room dedicated to desalinization because it's so effective. And I just wonder if we could ever get desal. I mean, that would work across the world.
Well, I read several years ago that they had plants that could create 17 million gallons of water a minute. So at 17 million gallons a minute, that's a lot of water that they can manufacture.
All right. Now, I don't know the water deal as well as I should, and I will. It seems as like you've got one side saying they're putting little tiny fish in the way of farmers and fresh food. And the other side saying they're using up all the water and getting paid for it, subsidized by us. Is that pretty much right?
Well, I think it's a straw man argument. I mean, you got more than just little fishes that depend on that water that's being sent down a river. You got an entire fishery. You got salmon and all the other fish that are in the water there. So if you cut off the entire fresh water supply, then all of the organisms that depend on fresh water or a combination of fresh and salt water will die off. So you got to let water go down that river. And whether or not it's a waste, I guess it's a social value. If you don't value other wildlife, then I guess it's a waste. On the other hand, if you think that other life is worth trying to preserve, then you got to do a balancing act where you find a way to meet all the needs.
And is that a doable, or the side's pretty hard strong? Like MID's board has kind of changed to selling water and things like that. Is it doable? Getting people
in my opinion, the technology is there to do anything we want. It's a matter of being willing to spend the money. It's a matter of will. And the problem with the way we do things is we always go on the cheap. We don't always try to find the best solutions to problems. You just want to go with the cheapest solution, and that's fine for the short run. But in the long run, you got to spend the money. You got to do what you got to do in order to secure the water supply to make sure we don't run out. Yeah, I don't mind paying higher water rates if the money I pay is going to use to make sure that there's enough water for me in the future.
Yeah, you know, Bruce, you should mind paying higher water rates because you are. We all are. And this is just the beginning. They're going to go higher.
Well, you're talking about compared to the farming community, right? We're paying higher rates compared to the farming community.
Oh, absolutely.
And even there, I don't mind because they grow our food and it enables us to have a better standard of living. So I have no problem with paying more for water, but I want, you know, something in return. I don't want it just to go into somebody else's pocket without,
having to
provide added value.
No. In your opinion on salinization, when will that happen?
It's already happening. They got the technology.
It could
be done.
Well, as the water rates grow higher and higher, it's going to be cheaper and cheaper to do salinization. Do you follow?
Well, it's going to be more economical to do desalinization.
Right,
I agree.
Yeah.
Agree. Yeah. Yeah. But why do we have to wait? Why do we have to wait until there's a crisis and a shortage to start doing this stuff? Why can't we do it before the next drought?
Have we had a good winter that way? The snowpack and all the type of things that provide us water? Has it been a pretty decent year?
Well, the thing is people overestimate the benefit of one good year of rain because it takes a long time to recharge an aquifer, and people who depend on the groundwater are taking it out of the ground faster than the aquifer can recharge. And so even if you have a good year of rain, the water table is going to keep going down in those parts of the valley where they're relying entirely on groundwater for their water supply. That's just a fact of the way the ecosystem works.
Yeah, in your article you mentioned about Modesto Reservoir, and the 50 year of that drought, the water table dropped as much as 20 feet. That is very alarming.
What I was talking about was not the Modesto Reservoir. I was talking about the water table in some parts of the valley. The person who helped me with the technical information for the article said that some parts of the valley had the water table drop as much as 20 feet in the last year of the 5-year drought we just finished. And the water table is not going to come back up very quickly because it takes a long time for water to percolate down into the ground. And so he was saying that when the next drought hits, that those parts of the valley that were critically affected last time are going to get into trouble a lot more quickly because the water table will fall a lot more quickly because of the aquifer depletion in those areas where the water table has been dropping.
Bruce, can you talk a little bit about what happens when an aquifer or the storage vault, we can call. We lose that water, and it then collapses.
What can happen is you can have soil subsidence, which means that the level of the land actually drops as the water is drawn out. The ground compacts underneath where you've been drawing it out, and when the soil becomes more compact, water cannot percolate down into the soil as easily. Instead, you get more runoff, and in the long run, you have even less water that's going to be available in those locations. They were talking about Dos Palos, I think. The Dos Palos areas was seeing that kind of drop in the land. The land is actually dropping, and they showed pictures in the newspaper of where the soil around the irrigation canals was dropping, and the canals were cracking because of the drop in the level of the land. So that's another byproduct of the way we've been taking water out of the soil.
So that's like a lost case, southern San Joaquin Valley, the Lost Hills area, where there's just no more groundwater to be pumped.
Oh yeah, and Lost Hills, there's no groundwater at all. The water table has dropped below 450 feet below the ground level. So that means that it's uneconomical to farm there, because the cost to pump the water from below 450 feet is greater than the potential profit from the farming operation. So the bottom line for Lost Hills is you either give them surface water or from other areas of California, or they're going to let their land go fallow. So you're going to have large areas of the southern San Joaquin Valley. When the water runs out, they'll just stop farming down there, and the land will be abandoned, and it'll return to the desert it was before they started farming.
You know, Bruce, just to we've got about 8 minutes left, but have you read the article by Steve Ringhoff, "Will the Bee Survive"? Did you have an opportunity
Refresh my memory on what that subject was.
Will the bee survive? Not that long ago, the Modesto Bee arrived with an audible thump. Now the paper unwrapped would simply flutter on down like a large leaf. It's like throwing your newspaper up on the porch and it blows away. He says the last paper he had was 12 pages, and of course we've seen them for a lot less pages than that. But it's a well-written article. Steve Ringhoff is maybe he's retired. He's been an attorney in Modesto for many years, and very astute. But the point he's making here is that the McClatchy Company is now the second largest chain by circulation in the country, but it is burdened with overwhelming debt and swimming with the Wall Street sharks. Credit default swaps are in play. So up front, he says this. This article argues for a local newspaper in Modesto. It could be the Bee, it could be a startup, but it must be a newspaper. It must be something printed, ink on paper, not in some cloud somewhere. It must be something vetted, trusted, accountable, and holding others to account in a permanent form. It must be something that not only is easily dismissed or buried in the chaos of the internet, its form projects its function. Well, as I said, one Wall Street commentator speculated that the loan made last year by the hedge funds to McClatchy was a loan to own, and that ultimately McClatchy might be rolled up into an entity with the National Enquirer. One Wall Street commentator gives McClatchy as high as a 50-50 chance of bankruptcy within a year. Pretty scary stuff.
Yeah, and, for and some people, what we'd like to see is someone who lives here locally who could buy that newspaper from McClatchy's to keep the bee going. But I don't know that that's going to happen. I don't know whether you're aware of it, but we used to have an alternative paper called Stanislaw Connections that had a circulation of 4,000. That was put out by the Peace Life Center, and they tried
to
do.
There.
Oh, are they still? I haven't seen their paper in a long time, but they do
sure.
still put
well,
that out
each
month. Well,
we have at the restaurant; they're free.
Uh huh. Oh, okay.
You know, all they ask is for contributions or donations.
Right.
I understand
right.
that
well,
they're working towards radio
uh-huh.
to see if they develop their own radio station.
Mm-hmm. Well, they kind of have the same mission as the Valley Citizen website, to inform local citizens where the newspaper doesn't have the resources to do it. And it's regrettable that the Bee, which once had 650 local employees, now has less than 50. That's really regrettable how the paper has declined, and it's through a combination of bad management and a change in the environment for news dissemination. With the advent of the internet, newspapers are being made obsolete.
Well, you know, and of course, some of the problem is their own, in that they went out and bought newspapers that were losing money and made them part of their system so that they could lose more money. You know, I had a short conversation with Brian Clark, the Modesto Bee editor, and he was sort of revealing in the fact that the dependence they had on the internet, the difficulty they were having to produce a newspaper
uh-huh.
paper on it, he was sort of lamenting, I guess, the fact that, I guess he told me what I should have known, that people who read the newspaper, the editors get an idea of what to include in their newspaper by
mm-hmm.
the internet. They
mm-hmm.
they look at how many people are hitting on stories. Well,
mm-hmm.
if the stories on the internet are the ones on crime and those kinds of subjects, well, that gives them a clue. We're going to print what they want instead
mm-hmm.
of the primary function used to be. We're going to print what needs to be printed, and
mm-hmm.
as long as Garth Stapley, a Bee reporter, for 25 years, is that Garth now was made the opinion editor of
mm-hmm.
the Bee, with the pledge that he would speak to power.
Mm-hmm.
I hope he succeeds. I hope he does well, and because I hate to see him go back to Street Porter. So we're going to.
Well,
gonna
it's not if McClatchy goes bankrupt, it's really not going to matter. He won't have a job if they go bankrupt.
Well, no, I know that, but anyhow, I sort of regret that, and you know, I did as part of this conversation. I did tell Brian that I have never, ever asked anybody to cancel their newspaper or not to read it, because we need it, but we have to read it more.
Agreed.
Here's your song.
Yeah, thank you.
We'll be
back. Talk to you later. Bye.
Yes, Douglas Froman. We'll be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Dave.